It is Saturday, October 25th, 2008, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, the week in geek news and your questions and comments about technology.
The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on Geek Speak, we are talking about the week in geek news for the first half, and during the second half, we'll open up the phone calls, phone numbers for your calls with questions and comments about technology. You can ask us anything you'd like. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks Sean Cleveland, Senior Technical Marketing Manager at NVIDIA. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning.
We have John Tracy, Technical Support at Acilion. Welcome.
Thank you. Can I talk?
Yay, there's John.
Hey, John. Morning.
I couldn't see you.
And Mr. Miles Elam, support student, programmer, and political junkie. And I was trying to say support person, but you're not really support. It's
we support you.
It's not. It's a
and I support you teacher, too, John.
You're supported a teaching assistant, person, right?
Yes, I'm a TA and a tutor.
All right. And today you're sitting next to me, which feels really good. Okay, let's go on.
Okay, that was kind of creepy.
Lyle's blushing.
All the time. Let's start with the geek news. Sean?
Okay. Let's see here. Windows Vista, or Microsoft, I should say, is releasing Windows Vista Service Pack 2 beta next week. This is a beta that's going to a special group called the Technology Adoption Program customers. I guess they're customers? That means they pay for that? I'm not sure. It's a group from that, I guess, gets access to these early betas. I'm not sure I would want to be one of those people. But there it is. They don't know when it's going to be released. The final version will be released. They said it's going to be based on quality. But let's get to the meat. What does it offer? It's going to add Windows Search 4.0, which is supposed to be faster. And provides improved relevancy in searches. It's going to contain the Bluetooth 2.1 feature pack that supports the most recent specification updates. It's going to add the ability to record data onto Blu-ray media natively in Windows Vista.
Very nice.
It adds Windows Connect Now. It's called WCN, if you want to know the acronym, to simplify Wi-Fi configuration. That should be interesting.
This is Geek Speak. Of course we want to know the acronym.
And Windows Vista, it's going to enable the EXFAT file system. So EXFAT, which is file allocation table file system support for UTC timestamps, which will allow correct file synchronization.
Between multiple time zones?
Yeah, across time zones.
Nice. So what is that, extreme FAT? Extreme file allocation table?
I guess. It's lowercase extreme EX fat. And then, of course, capital FAT.
Is it still 16-bit? Or 32-bit, rather? Do you know?
I don't know.
File system? Okay.
I don't know.
Because the last time they did FAT change, they went from 16 to 32-bit. I just thought maybe it's 64.
No. All they added was this coordinated universal timestamp.
That's cool.
Which is the UTC stand for. Yeah.
All right.
That's Vista Service Pack 2.
I have a question.
Ta-da! Oh, wait, that's an Apple sound. I'm sorry.
As a Mac user, I have a question about Vista. I know there's still a lot of pressure about not going to Vista. Vista sucks. Vista this, Vista that. I'm just, because at work, we just got another laptop, and we're like, oh no, it's going to have Vista. It's going to be we're going to have to integrate it. But it turned out to have XP, so we're all like, phew. Which brought up the question of, why are we resisting Vista at work? It's inevitable. We're going to go to Vista someday.
It's the IT department.
We are the IT department.
You don't listen to our old shows.
Vista's cool. Vista's hip now.
Am I just out of it? You know, I'm running Vista.
We got
great.
An email from somebody once that said, "You guys are crazy. You know, it's IT departments, and these are the reasons why." We'll have to go dig up that email.
No, there are reasons. That email thread.
I think it's we have to do more work, or we have to work. I think IT people just don't want.
Just don't have to do.
Just
the work.
Don't want to do the work.
Well, for people who have older hardware that the companies aren't making right. the
or legacy programs
to support the existing hardware in a company. Yeah, you got to have perfect hardware. Right, it's got to support all the latest drivers. That's an issue.
Right, the drivers had to be rewritten, and XP drivers have had several years of maturing, of getting cleaner and cleaner. And Vista basically, you pulled the rug out from everyone and said, "Okay, now start again."
But Vista itself, as an operating system, especially for consumers, is perfectly viable and perfectly fine. All of the issues have been fixed. We had a thread about this person in our own Geek Speak.
Yeah,
you know, amongst the geeks, we have this crazy thread where we talked about why Vista went wrong, and there's so many reasons why.
And you had this great response of why, and I said, let's make it a blog entry so we can share it to the universe. And
that's why I'm bringing it up now.
That means I would have to blog.
Yeah, at this point, if you're buying all new hardware, if you're buying a whole new computer, and all the hardware is coming with that computer, then
no
it's
reason
going
not
to have
give.
The driver.
You know what? I don't install XP anymore. Really, you know, in the beginning, XP offered 30% more performance in games. You know, we're talking, that's a lot
that's
for
a
frame
deal.
Rate, you know? So I go buy a new operating system for $250, and I lose $100 worth of my graphics card in performance loss. No, that's why gamers didn't adopt it. But all that stuff has been fixed. XP is still faster than Vista in games, but only by a few frames.
You know what, Sean?
It is so within the noise, it's not an issue anymore.
Sean, your document about like why Vista had so much trouble launching, why it's in the space it is now, is great. And the only one thing it is are those things fixed? And you're saying they are. What I'm going to do is I'm going to post that for you. I'll be your secretary. I'm going to get that blog entry up. Because it's the first time I saw the real reasons why Vista kind of lingered in this place that it is now. So anyway, thanks for your thoughts on it, Sean. John, your news story, sir.
I'm going to start with Chandrayaan 1 launched on the 22nd by the ISRO. So kudos to ISRO. Good job, you guys. You're probably all out there going, all right. Who? What?
ISRO,
this
what?
ISRO is the Indian Space Research Organization. They're kind of the Indian version of NASA. They launched a satellite called Chandrayaan 1. It's going to be orbiting the moon early November, November 8th, November 10th, around there. It's done a successful GTO, so it's up there in geostationary orbit right now. Well, geotranslunar orbit. It's a transitional orbit that it's using to the Earth's gravity to sling itself out so that the moon's gravity will capture it, and then it'll use the moon. It'll do some braking maneuvers, and it'll go into translunar orbit. It's got a bunch of scientific packages on it. It's going to go up. It's going to look for water. It's going to look for minerals. It's going to look for radioactive isotopes in the surface of the moon. Everything we need to plan out, here's where we're going to set up a moon base kind of stuff. It's going to be followed up by Chandrayaan 2 coming up in 2010, 2011, which is actually going to drop a rover on the moon to look for sites in more detail. They're using this experiment right here, this scientific package to
the platform
to look for where they're going to drop the second one.
Cool.
To do a little more in-depth study before we
can you pronounce it again for us?
Chandrayaan.
Chandrayaan 1.
I do not know if I'm pronouncing it correctly.
All right.
It's a Sanskrit word, and I don't know what.
You know
it
the
means.
Deviation? That's great.
And it's significant in that they did this whole project for $80 million.
No way. And they're going to get it on the moon for that cost.
Getting them around the moon, and it has
so
scientific
that,
packages.
Does that $80 million include the launch costs? I mean, they probably got a load off of, they probably got a lift off of somebody else's.
No. Rocket. They use their own PSLV.
Indians,
Polar Satellite Launch Vehicle is an expendable launch system
that India
that's operated
developed.
By them.
That's pretty cool.
It was developed by India to launch their own stuff.
Very cool.
So the comparative budgets. ISRO has a budget of $1.3 billion a year, and they were able to pull this off. NASA has a budget of $17.3 billion a year.
Yeah.
You know, but of course, they're doing a space shuttle program, a lot
doing
of other legacy
things
that they're trying to keep going.
Thank you, John, for that update. Miles, what's going on with Wikipedia?
You can now get Wikipedia on DVD. It's equivalent to having a 20-volume encyclopedia set that you can download.
How much does it cost?
It's free. It's free, and it's a download over BitTorrent, the peer-to-peer file sharing software. The thing about this particular case, it's through the SOS Children's Villages. Mm-hmm. It's a version of Wikipedia that has actually been vetted for accuracy. So whoa, people have gone through really? And read the articles that they've compiled.
I was just going to ask that.
And they've also removed any content that is considered adult.
And how many pages are we talking about?
How many
volumes? Pages? Like
it would be the equivalent of a full 20-volume encyclopedia set.
Nice.
Yeah. Who funds that kind of work? Where's it come from?
I think it's the group that does the Wikipedia. The
you also have to understand
group.
That the vast majority of the work has been done by Wikipedia, by people contributing
but
to
the
Wikipedia.
Vetting.
Yeah. That's a lot of work to go through that much material.
Yes, and they had volunteers doing that.
So are they going to sell this? Oh, it's volunteers.
No, it's free. It's free. You volunteers go and you download it, and you have the link is available on our website.
And this is for children? What about?
Well, it's for students in general.
And what about, I mean, some of the Wikipedia entries, even on, you know, clinical terms, like body parts and stuff, sometimes can get into also social uses of words. And there's some stuff that's not, it doesn't match the kind of traditional book form encyclopedia. Sometimes the material's a little risque.
Well, there is going to be some stuff that you have to put in because it's part of the human body, but
right.
stuff that might be considered more erotic. Or,
right. Like, I think pornography is one of the Wikipedia pages, right? I mean, are they
right.
going to put that in there or not?
Yeah, or for that matter, porn stars. Each porn star has their own.
Oh, right. So they're going to have to pull some things
that's
not.
So how much space are we talking about? Does this take
this
on
is disc? About this is about 3.5 gigs, so one DVD.
Okay. Nice. So that's a good focus point, too.
So not quite fitting on a phone yet.
It depends, I guess, on what
it would
phone
fit
you
on
have.
My phone. I've got an 8 gig. Okay,
but this is different from most other encyclopedias in that you go to it works like Wikipedia. You show up on Wikipedia, you click on a link, and it takes you to another article on Wikipedia. You know, so it's like instead of having an encyclopedia that says go look, you know, go see this entry, it's a mouse click away.
Next, they just need voice recognition. Take you to the right terms, and then read it back.
I don't see why that couldn't be done now.
Yeah. That'd be really cool.
You're listening to Geek Speak. We're doing geek news. In the air room is Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, John Tracy, and myself, Lyle Troxell. And
it's the original Geek Speak.
It is the original Geek Speak.
And I read the wrong PSA. Or
what's that? No, you did great. I just had good. Good. Oh, wait, did you read that?
No, I read the one before.
Okay,
that's
guys.
Good.
You know what? People don't want to
hear
this.
Oh, you did that? Okay, good.
Yeah. Who cares?
So whose story is
next?
Yeah,
I want to get a little
geeky. We're doing round robin. We're Sean's next.
Sean's, go for it.
So I was going to talk about paper that's 500 times stronger than steel and 10 times lighter, but I want to talk about something else. Maybe we'll get around to that.
Well, what else?
Wait, what are you talking about?
I don't know. You weren't paying attention, so I'm on to the next story.
No,
didn't you
steel,
hear the last one?
I heard steel paper.
All right, so there's this new technology. I'm not going to talk about steel paper.
Oh, come on. It's going to give all sorts of opportunities for bad puns. You know, the pen is
there's this new technology
sword.
From University of Berkeley that is going to allow circuit shrinks to 5 nanometers. So right now, it's a little geeky here. When you make a microprocessor or a circuit of any type, they use what's called photolithography. And the way that works is it's using light to cut away. That's the best way to describe this.
I can describe it pretty well. It's like the silk screening process.
Yes. So it projects a complex circuit design onto a silicon wafer, right? Which has been coated, and it uses light to harden the surface area where you want the circuits themselves or the connections to be.
And then those places that have been hardened based on the image, you then wash
with
acid.
And then it's put into
a caustic
acid, and it washes that away, and what's left is your connections to your circuits, and they just keep doing that, and that's how they're able to...
So that's photolithography.
Photolithography.
And a lot of times they're using X-rays, for example, a very short wavelength of light to get that small size.
And right now what...
And the problem is we already see the end of this. And this kind of falls into what's called Moore's Law, that we double the number of transistors every 12 to 18 months. And at some point, we can't shrink those transistors down anymore because the wavelength of light can't be focused to this, you know, anything... They're saying anywhere down to 35 nanometers.
And it's not
now,
even...
Chips right now are being made at 55 nanometer.
Yeah.
The next is going to be 40 and then 35. And then... All of a sudden, these fabs won't have the hardware necessary to focus light
and
to make chips any smaller.
Yeah, and let me give some more detail on that, which is really interesting. It's not that the light can't focus that much. It's that if you put a material in between the light path, what happens is you start getting kind of prism effects around the boundaries of the screen. So your light actually gets diffused because it's so close to size of the screen.
Exactly,
yeah, it's very cool.
So this new method is actually using a little lens. It's a that floats above above this piece of wire that they it's going to help. Well, it's not using light so much. What it's doing, it's using a material that, if I can get here to my story, I'm moving all over the place. So it uses metal electrons that vibrate when exposed to light. And the vibrations are smaller than the light's normal wavelength. And they're calling these evanescent waves. And this is what's going to allow light to be concentrated down to 5 to 10 nanometers.
Wait. So you take a little tiny piece of material, and just like the screen itself is causing it to diffuse, you then use that to correct the diffusion that's happening.
Exactly.
Oh, my gosh. And so it's like micro vibrations that are at the same frequency of the light?
Yes.
Or some frequency that would cause it to cancel itself.
And they're able to control that.
When you say flying, I always assume that on a platter, when you do the burn, it's like one time. Or are they doing laser scannings now so it could actually fly beneath where the laser path is? Do you know how that works in FABS?
I don't know.
Wow.
But they're saying with this new plasmonic nanolithography, that's what they're calling it, plasmonic nanolithography.
And of course, and why wouldn't you?
They're able to make current microprocessors 10 times smaller but far more powerful. And the technology could be used to create ultra-high density disks that can hold 10 to 100 times more data than disks can today.
See, this is the thing that's always amazed me. We always talk about this.
We always talk about
this.
These
boundaries coming.
Great leaps,
right,
you know.
Yeah.
We'll be able to make terabytes hard drives. So, where's my terabyte hard drive?
Just to be clear, right
in
now...
In my iPhone.
Right now, they're like the most recent processors from AMD and Intel.
Yeah.
What is their micron count? How wide are their paths?
45 nanometers.
Right now, we're at about 55 nanometers.
And they're saying they can get that down a lot smaller.
To about 5 to 10.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot more transistors.
So there are terabyte drives, but, you know, I want terabyte in... You know, a smaller form factor.
I want something embedded in my skin that's 4 terabytes. Yeah.
Well, that combined with memristors, we're looking at that those types of densities in the near future. So.
Yeah. John, I think you're up.
You know, the only thing that could possibly compete with this would be sticky tape.
You mean like masking tape or something?
No, not like masking tape. More like, I'm trying to think of a non-brand way to say it. Like Scotch tape. I'll just say it.
That's a brand.
Yeah, I know. I couldn't think of
painter's tape.
No, not like masking tape. Clear. Tape.
Okay.
How about clear tape?
It's called sticky tape in
clear
most
sticky,
places.
Clear
except
sticky
around
tape?
Here. Clear sticky tape. It's the stuff you use to wrap Christmas presents with or birthday presents. So if you take, it is Scotch 3M, Scotch tape made by 3M. That's the tape you need to use.
Okay. What do you do with this besides like put up your kids' pictures on your walls?
When you pull it at a certain rate, when you're unraveling it from the spool, it releases X-rays. And they've found that if you do it at 1.18 inches per second, I'm sorry, if you do it at 1.18 inches per second,
you're going to try to do the
metric. You start releasing X-rays at a continuous rate. Good enough so that if you have a spool of this that you're releasing X-rays from, you can put your hand over it, you can put an X-ray photoreceptor on the other side, a blank X-ray plate, and you can actually image the bones in your hand doing this. So some people have made a machine that does this, that actually unspools the tape at a certain rate. It's inside a vacuum, and there's a glass on top of it. You put your hand up there, and you can image your hand.
This thing, I broke my finger. Well, yeah. Let's bring out the tape X-ray.
Exactly. So, you know.
Increasing cancer rates in the U.S. are suddenly explained.
That's what I want to know. All these people who wrap presents for a living, man, what's going to happen? Are they like... No, you have to do it at a very specific rate. And they have the tape inside a vacuum so that it's...
Yeah, that's the thing is X-rays
don't travel. I'm thinking like Idiocracy, all the energy is produced by tape, and there's just mountains of tape.
But I just thought it was so cool.
Cities of tape.
That you're using this really low-tech thing to make a really high... You know, so you can have an X-ray machine sitting there loaded with tape instead of radioactive isotopes.
You know, I know that X-ray sensors have become more and more sensitive. Like,
that's
really
part of it.
They keep on talking about it, but that sounds like they're... pretty sensitive. I mean, there can't be that much.
If you just go up to YouTube and look this up, X-ray machine tape. They actually have a video where they're showing this guy, you know,
just putting
a regular, you know, like a dental X-ray thing, you know, that
they
stick inside your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Not a sensor.
It's a
sensor.
It's a film. Sure.
It actually is an electronic sensor because that's what they do now instead of putting. The
yeah, you really want to do electronic.
And he puts the electronic sensor up there and he takes.
I'm trying that next time I go to my dentist.
Taking some tape with you.
Yeah. Henry Ramirez. I'm going to him, and we're going to try that out.
I just thought it was so
cool. He would
do
it, too. He's the kind of guy who's like, let's do it.
Let's do it.
But you could actually take this technique. They don't know why this is produced. You know, they understand, wow, it's releasing energy, and some of that energy is blocked, and the stuff that's emitted is X-ray. Huh. But they don't understand, why is X-ray being emitted? Why not all these other radiations? Why is the X-ray content so powerful that you can actually emit?
You know, there are parts of the world that are going to hear this, and Scotch tape purchases is going to go way down.
Yeah.
No, it's not dangerous.
Scotch tape.
It's X-rays, John. Of course, it's dangerous. No, I'm kidding. It's not.
The idiocracy, the token idiocracy. Yeah. Scotch tape, it's what X-rays crave.
Miles, what's your next news story?
When the iPhone SDK was first going to be released last year.
What does SDK stand for?
Software Development Kit. It was going to allow for people to make web applications and then have it viewable as though it were a native iPhone application. However, there was a big to-do about people saying, no, I don't want just a web application. I want to be able to get down to the iPhone itself to be able to use accelerometer and the camera and the like, which you can't do from a web page. And so it looked like the full screen web app was stillborn. It just wasn't showing up. When the iPhone 2.0 software came out, it didn't have it, and it disappointed a lot of people, myself included. Recently, someone has...
First off, you said it doesn't exist. I said, yes, it does, and we had this big fight about it. And the truth is that... What?
It didn't until OS 2.1 was released.
Okay, but we had this argument after 2.1.
Except that it was not published.
I'm not
it
hearing that you're right. Where's the you're right? Wait a minute. Never mind. You don't have to say it. Told you so.
It was not present in the 2.0 software.
Okay.
And when 2.1 was released, there was no mention that that situation had changed. In fact, if you had used the information as it was available for the preview to the SDK and the beta...
All the documentation, basically.
Right. It would not work.
Right.
However, a user whose username is only known as Clancy was able to find, I don't know the means of it, but was able to find the meta tags necessary to get the iPhone OS to recognize it as a full screen app and take away all of the browser chrome that appears around
it. I think
it.
He might have been able to do it with a bookmarklet, because in the bookmarklet you'd be able to have access to JavaScript, and then the JavaScript you could crawl the document and see what's going on of their iPhone apps.
Except that it's, well, okay.
Anyway.
iPhone apps
very
are
cool.
Written in Objective-C.
So
iPhone apps are not written in a web page form.
True, but they then use HTML, I'm assuming, to do their rendering.
Okay.
Moving on. So the iPhone can now do full screen web application, which means your cool clock and translation app that you've been developing can actually go full screen now.
Yes.
Because I don't use your clock because of that silly bar
really?
At the bottom. Yeah, it's annoying. I don't like the little bar at the bottom. But if you can get rid of the bar, then I'll do it.
Okay.
Thanks, Miles.
Well,
John,
do you
use an iPhone, John?
You know, I'm probably the only person in the room who has a Windows phone.
Just got an email
from
Don in, I don't know where from.
Clearwater, Nebraska.
He sent an X-ray emitting tape, a link to light emitting Post-its. So
sure.
It's a Flickr site, and somebody shows that this phenomenon they observed in dead of night when they pull cheap brand sticky notes. You know, they peel it away.
Yeah, and tape, too, does
and
that.
It releases, it releases energy, and it just makes sense.
They can actually get on film.
You've got a chemical
energy.
Bond,
right?
And you're breaking that chemical bond.
And it's like little sparks, the little blue light sparks.
Yeah.
And, of course, that would produce X-rays if it's noise generated. Oh, cool, yeah. Oh, neat, yeah.
That was Don from Santa Cruz, Don Cochran.
Cool.
Well, are we done with our plugs?
Yeah, go for some news. Let's hear it.
Should we talk about...
The paper?
Paper steel?
Yes.
Stronger than steel.
The Superman of paper.
Yes. It is the future.
Well, so now we're going to have, instead of Man of Steel, Man of Paper.
So, we all know what...
Go ahead, Sean.
We all know what carbon nanotubes are, right? Like I said, it's those things that cause cancer and make it hard to breathe.
Oh, no.
those poor research assistants are all dying because they're playing with carbon nanotubes without proper... I mean, who knew, right? It's like the early days of X-ray. People were just playing with it, and all of a sudden, they're dying. No one knows why.
Carbon nanotubes is a new material that could revolutionize multiple industries and change the way human race
deals
with space. Sure.
And it's made out of carbon, which is one of the most abundant.
Actually, cancer treatments, to better electronics, you know, to a lot of things.
Space elevator.
Space elevator. Well, now they have Bucky paper. You got sticky tape, we got Bucky paper. And on its own, it looks like a mere thin, filmy paper. It looks very fragile. But, wow, it's...
turns out it's not very fragile.
It's very, very strong. In fact, it could be up to 500 times stronger than steel. And maybe a mere tenth the weight of steel. And we were talking about just a... if you unspool a carbon nanotube...
It emits X-rays.
You said like a teaspoon of carbon nanotube like collection?
A teaspoon could cover 3/4 of a football field when laid out flat.
So it's really thin.
It's really thin.
It's like gold leaf thin.
When you start stacking this stuff, it turns into a paper-like product that's very strong. Could be used for armor, for cars, for a lot of things.
Wait, strong in what way? I mean, when people say something is stronger than steel, it's not necessarily that you could, fire a gun at it and the paper will hold it.
I agree. And people are wondering, what does that mean? Is it stronger by cross-sectional area? What's the E value?
There's a lot of questions.
What's the material strength under fatigue? How does it, work? I don't think all of that yet.
But from a perspective of using it as a sheeting for like vehicles, right? If you take your most of the cars now are either fiberglass or aluminum, and you're trying to downgrade the weight but still have some strength and rigidity, this would be the perfect material for that. And it's also probably non-conductive if it's carbon nanotubes.
Yeah. So researchers have already created bucky paper that's half as strong as the best existing composite material. Known as IM7. By year's end, they'll get it there. It'll be 35% lighter than IM7. So I could see this being used for a lot of different things. Maybe as a way to strengthen up a handheld device.
Sure. Notebooks. Yeah. Things
like but that. How expensive is it? Like, for example, a carbon fiber bicycle is extremely expensive compared to its steel or aluminum compatriots.
Yeah.
So how expensive is this paper going to be? If it's less expensive than the carbon fiber, that would make sense, but I don't see how it would be.
Yeah. But if it's that much stronger,
it's just carbon. Carbon's cheap.
It may not be used in everyday items.
Like diamonds.
There are new processes coming out to be able to form carbon fiber into shapes that are cheaper than ever before. So I think the technology is still in its
infancy. Seeing an early curve, but it's going to get to the point where it'll be cheaper.
They're going to have to, like we were saying, what if somebody gets a paper cut off one of these? It could take your arm off.
Well, like Lyle was pointing out, this could make a weapon you could sneak on an airplane, no problem.
Oh my gosh, it's ridiculous.
So we have to have carbon scanners.
It burns.
Carbon scanners at the airport. Yeah, that's good. No life material on. Okay, very cool. Thank you for the steel paper. Looks like we got a call waiting. Let's see who it is. Looks like we've got Valerie from Aptos. Valerie, welcome. Miles, will you hit number one over there? Yep, harder. Really push it. Yes. Valerie from Santa Cruz, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
This is Valerie from Aptos.
I'm sorry, Valerie from Aptos.
That's okay. I have a Dell XPS, and I was living in Santa Cruz, actually, and it was hooked up to wireless just fine. I moved to Aptos. I get Comcast. I get a Linksys G wireless router, Triangle wireless, and it just bounces me off. So I took the first router back. I got another one, and I actually haven't had the time to try and set it up. Last time I was on the phone to India for like 12 hours.
Valerie, can you move back to your old place?
No, I can't.
So is it the modem or the wireless point?
Well, I have the modem from Comcast, and then I have the Linksys wireless router.
So just a second. If you've tried to plug in your modem directly to your computer,
it works, right? You can get an internet connection if you use a wire.
Okay. But you know what? I get bounced out a lot from my from just the direct connection.
Okay. So here's some things. I mean, your DSL router, when you bounce,
no,
it
it's
might
Comcast
be screen-
cable.
I'm sorry. I'm talking about the wireless device. Sorry.
Oh, the wireless device I can't even use.
Okay, just a second. So the cable modem is going to be producing information for your local network, and that information may change when dropout occurs, and therefore your delay factor of having it could be that all of this is caused by the cable modem connection stuff. So, Sean?
So I've gone through this with DSL equipment. I've taken my modem. Same modem when I moved, and I expected it to work, and it didn't. And different cities have different requirements and settings for their modems, and they have to be hard programmed. That's what I learned.
But wait, are you doing DSL or Comcast cable?
But it's still
Comcast.
It's still the modem.
So this is a totally new setup, and Comcast came and put it all in.
Oh, okay. So this is new equipment.
When I moved.
Okay. Good, good. Because you can't expect your old equipment to work in a new area. Sometimes the settings have to be changed for that area. But if this is new equipment, it should
work. Okay, but the wireless point's not new. Is that right?
Yeah, the wireless is new.
But she's saying that she's getting dropped out.
I know. I want to solve that one first, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the wireless thing got damaged in moving, or you're using the wrong power supply for it or something like that. I think
it's the wireless, I went and bought a whole new wireless setup. A whole new wireless router. I just bought that, and it's not working. And also the hardwire, I keep getting bumped out all the time, especially when I change a short wire to a long wire to move around the house because I'm not wireless.
I think you go back to the Comcast and you ask them to replace the box and say it's not working.
Yeah.
And you just have that done right away, and then you know you're good at stable. And also tell them, when the guy comes out, make sure to be there and talk to him and go, look, I am having trouble connecting to this, and see if I'm assuming that your cable box is bad. And so what's happening is it's not giving the right information to your local network. That's why you're having dropouts. Your computer is recovering fast enough, but the wireless access point's not. And so it just starts failing, and then it never works. So that's what I would do, is replace the cable modem. Let's trust the wireless for a little while. That's my suggestion for you. Thank you, Valerie, for the call.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
And by the way, the Comcast store in Scotts Valley is closed permanently now. The one on Whispering Pines Road. So don't bother.
What's the address? No, I'm just kidding.
106 Whispering Pines Road.
Let's go pick it
later. So now you have to go to Santa Cruz.
Next news story. John? Miles?
Sure.
Sean, either any of you guys, but somebody
I'm ready.
Somebody
go ahead, Miles. Miles is ready. Go ahead.
So, P-Vote. It's been covered on NPR. I caught it on Science Friday this last Friday.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to take a bit more of a geeky aspect.
What's P-Vote?
P-Vote is an electronic voting software written in Python. And it takes away all the things that are... It doesn't concentrate on the whole piece to the voting problem.
It's just the part that the user sees.
It's just the part that the user sees when they're voting, but it's also concentrating on just the ability to take votes in a anonymous fashion. That's one of the issues with voting, is that it can't be tied to a particular person, but also being auditable, being able to have some accountability. And some of that accountability comes from the fact that it is open source software. A researcher by the name of Ka-Ping Yi wrote it specifically so that people could review it. The idea that we would have software that we, or some piece of computer technology that we couldn't look closely at to determine who is going to be our national or local representatives seems ludicrous, and yet we do it on a very, very regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
And so the software is called P-Vote, and it's about 500 lines of Python, and the URL should now be on our website. If people want to take a look at it and see how it works and to actually get it working, or it will be on our website very soon, this is the place to go. And there's more information about it, why it's being used, why it's important. And from a geeky aspect, it's really cool, because if you want to make a voting machine yourself, you can use the software as a basis for your machine, so you don't have to reinvent the wheel.
So it's free, open source kind of solution.
Yes.
And anybody can put in
it's
their voting machine.
It's free and it's open source. Yes.
Nice, nice. Well, thank you very much, Miles. John?
I have a story about craters on Mars. What do you have, Sean?
Craters on Mars?
Craters on Mars.
Didn't we know about craters on Mars already?
There's craters on Mars.
Okay,
go
next
figure.
Story.
Is there water in those craters?
No, not that we found.
Are there monsters?
Speculation about how a pair of craters was formed on Mars. These craters are unusual in that they're elliptical in pattern. They're elliptical in shape, and that they're regular in pattern, as though something impacted, two objects impacted that were once very close to each other. So the common theory was that these were Messier craters formed by just random junk hitting the moon. Hitting Mars. The new theory is that there is... there used to be another moon of Mars that had a smaller moonlet around it.
Oh.
And this is what impacted and caused
it. And crashed.
Wow, so there were more moons.
Yes. And they think Phobos, which is the smaller moon of Mars, is due to run into Mars within the next 12 million years or so.
How long ago was this collision?
They think it was 1.5 billion years ago, I think. I'm looking at that information.
That makes sense.
Right now.
I mean, our moon is coming closer to us, too. At some point, I think after the sun explodes, our moon will hit Earth. But interesting. So then they're discovering that because they're elliptical, which means it was coming at a quick velocity
angle,
right?
Yeah.
And then they're also because they're really close together around the same date. So it's something that was broken apart already before it hit the Earth.
Well, they have the craters are the same shape, same elliptical shape,
so
which
really
means they hit at
the
same
angle. Yeah.
And they're also on the same trajectory path.
Very cool. Yeah. And we have that story. All the stories are up now on geekspeak.org. Sean, I know you got more. Go for it, man.
Yeah, I want to talk about this new site I found called goodoldgames.com. Well, it's GOG, GOG.com. And it's a site that sells old PC games that are DRM-free. So what's kind of interesting about this is you go buy the game, and there are some services now. My favorite is Steam, that you can buy games through. And once you do, you have to have an internet connection. You buy the game, and you can install anywhere you want, but you can only be logged in on one machine at a time. So you still have access to your game. Kind of cool idea, and it works. And I think it's the only one that hasn't been cracked yet. But what this website does, GOG.com, is they sell you a game for $5 to $6, an old PC game, and you can download it as many times as you want. You can install it on as many PCs as you want, and you can play without an internet connection.
These are the games that are no longer being sold.
No longer
really,
being sold, yeah. But now they're giving them new life.
Wait,
and a lot of these old games are great. You
Fallout,
like Battle Chess, you know.
Battle Chess. Oh, Battle Chess is up there.
So So what happens when because I know they're like ROM emulators, like MAME, things like that.
Yeah, these aren't so much arcade games. These are PC games that were released. So there's a size that you have to download the game and then you install it. But if for some reason you lose your computer or you reinstall your operating system, you don't need to worry about having a backup of that game. You just go back to the site.
Now these are
log in and grab the game again.
These are old enough games that they're definitely designed for either XP or Windows 98 or 2000. There's other formats.
Like Fallout 2.
Will they still function on Vista?
They support Vista and XP. Well, they tell you. They tell you specifically which OSs are supported.
Before you buy. That's cool. Okay, so that's GOG.com for old games that you can get.
And in related news, Stardock, which is the company who makes copy protection schemes, that's less than August. I don't know how we missed this. They released, in conjunction with gas-powered games, a Gamer's Bill of Rights. We'll put a link up.
Bill of Rights.
Yeah. So they say, we the gamers of the world, in order to ensure a more enjoyable experience, establish equality between players and publishers, and promote the general welfare of our industry, hereby calling for the following. And they have 10 things. Like, gamers have the right to return games that don't work for a full refund. Gamers shall have the right to demand that games be released in a finished state. Gamers shall have the right to expect meaningful updates after a game's release. And there's 10 of these. And it's got people motivated now, and especially Stardock, which is interesting. They build these copy protection schemes for the games. Well, now they're working on new schemes that that are friendlier to consumers than current schemes.
Very cool.
So it's I'd like to follow this more.
Yeah.
We'll put the link up to the Gamer Bill of Rights, and I'd love to, if people out there have anything they want to give us, feedback.
Yeah,
I'd love to follow up on this and see what people actually think about this idea.
Yeah, it's a good idea. Thank you, Sean. We're taking calls with questions and comments about technology. You can ask us anything you'd like. The phone numbers are 476-2800. That's 831-476-2800. Or you can call us toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. The Geeks today are, that was Sean Cleveland speaking. I'm Lyle Troxell. We also have John Tracy and Miles Elam. And we're talking about the Week in Geek News, and we're also welcome to answer any questions about technology you have. We might not be correct, but we'll definitely answer them. The phone numbers again, 476-2800. Again, that's 476-2800. And that's in the Central Coast of California. And, of course, toll-free anywhere in the continental U.S. and beyond, 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877.
We might also be correct, though.
You run that chance.
We're always lucky.
In 8 years or so of us doing this, we have been correct numerous times. Hey, let me just ask you a little bit of history here on GeekSpeak. When I was asked to take the show for a little bit, who sat in the air room for me the first time? Was it you, Miles?
No, I believe it was...
It was John.
Yeah.
So you and me, John, you and I started the...
We had my uncle on. My Uncle Ron Day, who was a technical...
I was there too.
Were you there too?
Yeah.
So the first show.
I was there when your father came to us and said, "Hey guys,
try this out.
To take this show."
And when was that? 2000?
It was 2000. 2000? September 2000. Yeah. So we just passed her.
No, it was August.
Yeah, it was August.
August of 2000?
Yeah, because I started at the end of August, beginning of September, like the third show.
Because I had already ordered my Prius when I met Miles, who had also ordered his Prius. We were both waiting for our Priuses.
And then it took a few years before Sean got his, but his is better than yours.
His is newer.
Not anymore.
His has more miles than both of ours.
Combined.
Yeah. This man is a commuting fiend.
Not by choice.
That little delay didn't get us a call. Wow. That's weird. We almost always have calls stocked up. I guess we're just too interesting today. Another news story, John?
Ring, ring, ring.
No, if someone
yes,
else has
caller.
Some.
What's your question?
I have an old printer, and it won't connect to my computer. I can't find the correct connection.
Do you using USB or parallel?
Oh.
Or SCSI? SCSI printers?
Oh, my God.
Oh man, what a disaster.
Pain. Why? Yeah, it was because of the Terminators. Do you guys remember SCSI?
Yeah, and you had to set the IDs?
Yeah,
remember? Was, and
you could have seven, and then the SCSI 2 came out. You could have 15.
Okay,
devices.
So we got it. We actually
I'm actually upset the fact that I still have embedded in my head. COM 1, IRQ 4, COM 2, IRQ 3, COM 3. IRQ.
So from an email's question, call an emailer. Let's see,
an email
Mark
called in.
Emailed us in and asked, "Does the show come in decaf?" That's referring to my quick speed of talking. And you're right. No, I do drink coffee every day, and I talk too fast.
He says quickly.
Yes.
You know what it does? Just slow the playback down.
That's right.
Is there a way to do that?
Well. You just push pause a lot. And the second thing, isn't there a better use for adults than playing video games?
Oh, that's a good topic.
He says, I don't believe that games add anything positive to our lives. I'm talking violent fantasy games. Any comments? Yes, I strongly disagree. All right, let's take a call from Robin. No, seriously, it's relaxation. Here's an idea, and maybe this is totally ridiculous, but the human species has been around for a long time, and a large part of that was very combat organized. So humans have some part of them that they have some violence in them, and there's a lot of ability in our society to tone that down and not do that. But when you get into a fantasy world and you can let that go and enjoy it, whether that feeds it or it tames it, or it's at least, I mean, as a guy, I feel it. I feel like...
Provides a healthy outlet for it.
Thank you. Provides a healthy outlet.
With regard to a game like Spore, if it was what it had promised to be, which is showing off true biological evolution is a violent, messy affair. So there,
Spore is pretty violent and messy, dude.
Yeah, which
it's
I would
really
say,
violent.
Like, hey, that's the way to go. Except that Spore just didn't deliver, unfortunately.
Let's go ahead and take a call. I think we'll go ahead and go to San Miguel. Robin, welcome to Geek Speak.
Lyle, hi. It's Steve. How you doing?
Oh, Steve. Hi.
Good. I'll talk to you about that. The X-rays coming out of the Scotch tape. Now, I saw that on the internet also, and of course, my first concern for all those professional gift wrappers. But then I noticed that they said it had to be in a vacuum, which is safe. But none of the articles that I've seen on the internet actually said how much vacuum, because vacuum is relative.
Yeah.
You know, an altitude of 20,000 feet is vacuum. Then there's space vacuum. Do people that wrap packages on tops of mountains have a higher risk?
I don't think anyone's really going to have a risk from this.
I don't think so either.
There's not enough force, enough energy there.
Although it does remind me of when I was a kid when they used to have the X-ray machines in the shoe stores and you'd stick your feet in it. They're fluoroscopes, actually, direct X-rays, a lot of X-ray. And the salesman would look down and you could look down and see your toes. And I think about 6 or 7 years ago, they went to interview these salesmen to see if any of them, they were all dead.
Really? I wonder why.
Whoa, that is crazy.
Yeah, that's right. I've heard this before. I've never seen one, of course, because they're stopped.
Well, they were fluoroscopes, okay? An X-ray, the difference between a fluoroscope and an X-ray, they both use X-rays, but an X-ray machine, typically you have a piece of film, and you shoot the X-rays through whatever you want to X-ray, and the film is exposed, and you develop the film. And now, of course, they have digital, and they don't use film. On the other hand, a fluoroscope is a screen that immediately fluoresces. So you can actually stand in front of this machine and somebody on the other side can see your skeleton. When I was a child, again, and this was back in the 50s, my doctor had one in his office and he could look at you right on the screen. But the amount of X-rays, the quantity, are way, way, way beyond anything that we consider safe these days. It was huge quantity.
Right.
Right.
And they would stay in the room too, right?
Oh, yeah, they'd stay right there.
They wouldn't get behind a metal shield. They wouldn't leave the room.
Right. Nowadays, in case anybody's interested, is concerned about it, like the dental X-rays, they've made them so, so sensitive now that the amount of X-ray that comes out of a dental X-ray machine, for example, is so tiny because the receivers are real sensitive, that they're totally harmless. I mean, the operators go out of the room and they put the lead on and everything, but it's microscopic quantities compared to those huge amounts of X-rays.
And I think that's why we're actually able to use Scotch tape as a source, because the sensors are so good at this point. You can probably use a spark as a source. You know, take a car battery and just spark it together, and you probably have a source right there
That's absolutely true. And before I go, I know somebody mentioned the movie Idiocracy before.
We love it.
And, you know, I've seen it, and I know a lot of people didn't see it, and it's incredibly crazy and dumb, but there's every single thing in that movie you could see how it related to stuff that's going on now.
Yeah.
It's pretty goofy. If anybody's in the mood for a really, really goofy movie, it's a good one to rent.
Steve,
speaking of movies, Lyle.
Yes.
I have to come by and pick up the one I lent you.
It's here. It's here and ready to take. It's great.
All right.
Steve, thanks so much for the call.
Okay, see you later.
That's Steve from Live Oak. And now let's go ahead and take Robin on line two. Miles. Thank you, sir. Robin, welcome.
Thank you. Well, after all that, I have a terribly mundane and
Oh, we could use a mundane question. Go for it.
And very basic question. I have a Toshiba satellite that came loaded with some kind of Windows firewall and antiviral stuff. Well, I went ahead and downloaded my AVG, and like the warning said, I'm getting really, really slow internet. React.
Right, right.
So I'm wondering, what should I do? I assume that I need to uninstall one.
No. Don't uninstall. Go to your start menu, your start button.
Okay.
And go to the run line and type msconfig, and that will launch a little application that has a tab with named startup, and everything there is applications that start when Windows starts, and these are applications that run in the background that you don't need to run, and you can actually there's a checkbox next to AVG, just uncheck that, and when you uncheck that and you exit, it'll ask you if you want to restart. You can, but you don't have to. But the next time you restart and come back in, it won't launch into the background, and it won't take up any of your memory.
Another choice to do is you go into AVG and you change some of the settings. One of the things it has is it has mail checking all the time, which means that as you check your email, it's going to kind of scan it. And that's a safety feature, because it's possible that's a vector for a virus to come into your system, right? So you can turn off that scanning. You can turn off a lot of the features.
You can probably turn off startup.
So, but the point is that it does do really good features for you, and if you turn them off, you are more at risk. But you're right; it takes resources from your machine, and so it's a trade-off.
Yeah, but just keep in mind if you're not running it in the background all the time, that you need to manually launch it and run it on your own.
And actually, AVG has this great feature where it can actually schedule certain events. So what I would do is once a week have it set up to do a certain task, and that is to do a complete scan of your system, and then do that scan. And right after you do that scan, run your backup. So now you've got a clean machine and then a backup, and then you wait another week trying to be safe and smart about your usage, and you do that same process again. So the worst case scenario is you lose 1 week of your computer life. You understand?
Yes, I think so. I should uncheck the AVG on startup rather than the Windows?
Well, the Windows firewall is another choice. I don't think the firewall is actually doing active scanning. I think it's just blocking ports. So Windows firewall shouldn't actually be a concern. What you can do is, you know, uncheck it and then restart and see if your machine's faster and try the two. Windows, I don't think you can actually uncheck it. You have to go into the system preferences, Windows firewall, and actually choose to turn it off.
Yeah, to turn off the Windows firewall, you have to go to the control panel and go to the firewall and manually disable it.
Is that even a good idea, though?
I never use firewall.
Really? Okay.
But I do backups, so.
Yeah.
Also, make sure you don't have another antivirus program running on it, because some laptops do come pre-installed with other, like McAfee or something like that.
Yeah. And you can. You don't have to have anything running. When you run msconfig and you go to startup, you'll see a lot of stuff there that's running in the background. Now, you don't need it, but on a laptop, a lot of the stuff that's running is actually your trackpad and maybe to turn up the background light on your panel. These are little applications that the notebook actually uses. So you got to be careful, because you might lose functionality. But, you know, if you have a Toshiba notebook and you've got a bunch of Toshiba applications, probably best to let those run. But everything else, like QuickTime, will run in the background. Adobe Acrobat has an application that runs in the background. A lot of stuff, applications, and it's mostly just to check for updates. But all this stuff takes up memory. It's running in the background, and it takes up, you know, processing power. So I would just say don't run any of that stuff.
Okay, so I should uncheck all those unnecessary things, and then when I'm actually on the internet, then I should manually start the AVG?
You actually run AVG as an application, yeah. And then you go into a full system scan. Thank you very much for the call.
Make sure you grab updates, too. You'll want to get the latest update before doing a scan.
Definitely. Absolutely. Well, GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. GeekSpeak is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. The geeks this morning were Miles Elam, John Tracy, Sean Cleveland, and my name is Lyle Troxell. We'll be back next week, of course, where we'll be talking a little bit about reusing equipment.
And we'll have live thumb wrestling.
Live thumb wrestling next week.
GeekSpeak, and for the woman who had the Comcast issue, email us because we have
a good answer.
Yeah.
GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Complete Mailing Service, located in the Harvey West Business Park. Complete Mailing Service, pushing the envelope for Santa Cruz County since 1976. Complete Mailing Service at 425-5556. Broadcasting in HD Radio on 88.9 FM, this is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Ardo, and online at kusp.org. For KUSP and GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell. I'll see you next week.